NZ On Air Music presents Long Player.
Hello, this is Maeli Manzanza, and my latest album is Crisis and Opportunity, Volume 2, Peaks.
So this album, Crisis and Opportunity, Volume 2, Peaks, is super cool. It's got a super groovy and spontaneous feel. So what were you exploring with this album?
Okay, well, to give your listeners a broader idea of what this whole project is about, Crisis and Opportunity is a 5-album series of works that I've been spending the last, I guess, year and a half or year and three quarters now working on, ever since like COVID and the lockdowns kind of came in. And for me, like, there was the sense of, as I'm sure has happened for a lot of people, a massive sense of existential dread when those lockdowns first came in about, oh shit, what am I doing with my life? Everything's about to change. You know, where's the money coming from? What's my purpose in life? All of that kind of stuff. There was all of that, those sorts of existential questions. And of course as well, like, I might get sick and die, like, and which happened to a lot of people. And obviously that's like the most scary thing. And after like a little while of lockdown happening and sort of it settling in that, okay, all of these gigs are going to be cancelled and I better figure out what it is I'm going to be doing with all of my time now, there was, I think the silver lining of all of that was there was all of this time to spend composing music and I guess spend some time doing some serious work on who I am as a musician and what it is that I want to do and what it is that I want to be saying with myself. And I landed on the idea of like making a 5-album series in large part just to really give myself a massive project to kind of keep me busy and keep me sane in a lot of ways. And also, for better or worse, I am a very diverse and eclectic musician. You know, I love being a composer and I love being a drummer and I love being a jazz improviser and I love being a electronic music producer and I love like playing African music and playing like danceable kind of rhythms and I love playing abstract kind of surrealist kind of freeform kind of, you know, drumming kind of styles and stuff. And I have perhaps suffered from trying to put all of those things into one body of work, like one album or even one song, you know. And that can be cool, but it can often like pull focus from keeping something feeling as cohesive as possible. But for at the same time, like, I can't help but creatively want to be doing all of these different things rather than just being a jazz drummer or just being a electronic music producer or just being a composer or whatever it is. So I decided to make this 5-album series of works in order to kind of focus those kind of different creative impulses. So Volume 1 was effectively the London jazz record where I got together with a bunch of like London-based musicians and kind of wrote for them and tried to write something which was directly inspired by my time in London. This record, Volume 2, is you know, very much drawing upon both the musicianship of my Kiwi expats who are living out here, who are made part of the band, as well as sort of enjoying playing with that line between live jammy improvisation and sort of producer, beat maker, sampling kind of modes of making music. And so I guess that's the story of the process of this record.
Let's talk about this first track that we are going through today, titled Peaks and Ferns. What is this song about?
Okay, well, I mean, this is a New Zealand audience, so a lot of you would probably remember the flag debate. And, I mean, well, just to kind of quickly go over it, that Prime Minister John Key decided to put together a poll to change New Zealand's flag from the Union Jack and the Southern Cross to some new potential design, of which what we ended up landing on was like four different versions of the Silver Fern. And there was a bit of a protest vote, which ended up getting a fifth option, which was the flag called Red Peaks. And, or Red Peak, sorry, if memory serves me right. And with those flags, there was this kind of, I guess there was a cultural divide between, for lack of a better term, I guess the brand New Zealand folk who saw it as like, you know, this is a symbol that's on the All Blacks and it's distinctive and it's a known New Zealand symbol. And they saw it perhaps from the sense of a marketing thing, like here's an effective marketing brand thing. And then there was like, I guess the other side of it, which I guess typically maybe the more quote unquote neoliberal or conservative kind of leaning people went for that design. And then the more, I guess, quote unquote progressive liberals went for the Red Peak design because it was like, you know, a bit more, maybe a little bit more modern. It made a hat tip to the sort of Māori cultural roots of the land that we came from, but it was also perhaps, I guess, seen as a more modern progressive symbol for what New Zealand could be. But that divide and that sort of conversation was really interesting because societies, I think, tend to operate at their best when there's a healthy balance between, I guess, the conservative tendencies and the liberal progressive tendencies. If like one side gets their own way too much, it causes an imbalance. You know, you need new ideas and new ways of thinking, and then you also need to be able to look to the past and to traditions and to kind of embed those new ideas in a way that's stable. You know, if all you're thinking about is new creative ideas, that's cool and whatnot, but you know, it can lead to a relatively unstable or not well planned out kind of way of operating, whether it's in business or in art or in society or politics, and vice versa. If all you're looking at is like conservative ways of thinking, then that can lead to stagnation and getting stuck in a rut and not being able to adapt to the new and not being able to evolve. And so you need both, I think, even though I definitely lean leftward on like most things. But I found that the conversation between the two and the sort of the splits and the divides and how different kinds of people viewed the country in different ways, I thought that was a really interesting thing to witness and be privy to and to join in on. And I named that piece Peaks and Ferns after that, I guess, sentiment. I thought it was a nice sort of interesting kind of thing to think about and to bring into my music. And so that's what Peaks and Ferns is about.
Thank you.
This one is very much it's like a tribute to my dad in many ways. So the melody is based off of a riff that my father would sing in his African drum classes that he used to run. And he still does little bits of them, like, even now, but, like, back in the days he would regularly do these African drum classes in the Aro Valley Community Hall, and he would take me along when I was a kid. And it was like the melody that came out was sort of based on this. I can't even remember the lyrics that he would sing, but the melody itself is based on an idea, this musical thing that he used to kind of sing, which came from, I guess, lots of traditional kind of African styles of making music. Like, the kind of harmonic and melodic scales definitely come from a very African, for without wanting to get too musically nerdy, like different kinds of pentatonic and blues scales and that kind of thing, which come from lots of traditional African music. It's definitely a lot of that in there, and the rhythms as well. It's like this 12-8 kind of African thing that's kind of, you know, between the sounds of the percussion and the way that the rhythm's put together, like, it definitely is clearly like a very overtly African influenced thing. And I got a lot of that from my father. You know, growing up, I sort of learnt music and drums and percussion by osmosis, just by being around him. And lots of the roots of rhythm that I rely upon today in my drumming, regardless of whatever the musical style is, a lot of it comes back to the African rhythms that I learnt from him as a kid. And lots of, like, pretty much any kind of music that is a danceable kind of music or has a rhythmic pulse, you know, you can trace the rhythmic roots of it back to sort of African drumming styles that have been happening for millennia, you know. And I was very fortunate to grow up with early access to that. And this piece, African Folk Song, is, you know, it's drawing on a lot of different kind of African musical styles. Yeah, so I guess it was just a piece that was a hat tip to that music that I grew up on and inspired me, and to my father, and the music that he kindly handed down to me over the years. Yeah. This is African Folk Song from Crisis and Opportunity Volume 2, Peaks. A Night in Berlin came from the sort of, this is like, I guess, a typical, when I was talking about this process of having like an open jam, which I then just let happen musically and then pick the best moments and turn them into a loop or a beat. This was like clearly like one of my favorites from that section of the recording session, I guess. So I think, if I recall correctly, I believe I can't even remember what, it would have been like taking like a few bars off of a jazz standard and reharmonizing it slightly so it wasn't like purely biting the jazz standard of whatever the original was, but then using that as like a just a vamp that we could use to kind of open up on and let musically kind of evolve. So this was one of those pieces. And well, firstly, in terms of the Berlin vibe, the recording session was done in Berlin. It would have been, I guess, September last year. And the band had a gig in Poland, which was sort of in the middle of that COVID period, but Europe had opened up enough to allow travel, and the festival that we had booked happened to not have cancelled, thankfully, because, you know, pretty much all of my gigs had cancelled over that period. And I also knew that I might not have a chance again to record with that group of musicians. So, you know, it was either now or never. So we booked some time in Berlin to do the recording. And I guess we had Ashton's birthday around the time that we were there. And we had a small group of friends hanging out. And it was just a really, like, lovely social moment to have when I guess we hadn't, you know, like, obviously, like, the amount of social interactions that one could have during the last COVID year had been dramatically reduced. And it was like the first time, like, just seeing a lot of old friends of mine who had lived in Berlin or who were living in Berlin, and meeting new friends and just enjoying each other's company and music, and reflecting on that, it was just like, it felt like maybe one of the most enjoyable nights I'd had for a long time in recent memory, at least since COVID hit and there was no sort of social times. And it felt like it was a nice thing to sort of dedicate a piece of music to. So A Night in Berlin was the name of that one. This is Two Chords and the Truth. It's another one of the let's just jam and see what happens and then edit it into something cohesive later kind of ones. And compositionally, like, this piece pretty much does exactly what it says on the name, right? It's just two chords kind of going back and forth. It's very, very simple. And from that, there's, I guess it was a lot of joy to work on this one, because, like, so the main guitar melody that you hear just came from, like, a little excerpt that was just a little portion of a more typically jazzish guitar solo. But because it was such a strong melody, it just made a lot of sense to kind of isolate that and sort of make that the hook or the main sort of core of the piece. And it just had such a strong musical statement to me that, like, it became the hook upon which the rest of the editing process could kind of open up and turn into what was the track. And when you hear that statement, two chords and the truth, I think I'm playing off of what Bob Dylan said, something along the lines of, all you need for a good song is four chords and the truth. And it's very true, you know. You don't, as cool as it is to have, like, all sorts of intricate kind of musical moguls to kind of navigate through with all sorts of different rhythms and chord changes and harmony and melody and all of the various kind of complications and points of interest you can get to with music, often it can just be the right thing to just have a very simple compositional structure of, like, two chords or four chords and just let the music tell you what it wants to do. And I thought this was a great example of that. Without wanting to sound cliche, it just felt like a really good vibe. And you know, two chords and the truth, you know, hopefully it does what it says on the tin. So this one, Crisis and Opportunity from the album, is, you know, there's the crisis of, you know, the lockdowns and the, you know, the coronavirus and everything that's kind of come of that. But there was also the opportunity to go forth and use this time wisely to hopefully make as much good music as possible. And the composition itself was like, it was kind of one of those ones where I got kind of lucky. It, like, the melody just sort of came to me, which is sort of a weird thing to say. It can feel a little bit woo-woo, like, yeah, man, like, the music just came to me, man. But it kind of, it was one of those ones where it just did seem to kind of land on my lap as I was going for a bike ride. And the melody just came and I was like, oh, this is quite catchy. And I just remembered it and then figured it out on the piano and then figured out some chords around it. And I just really loved just how it all kind of came together. It was really pretty. And it sort of, it felt like one of those moments where it was like, you know, just little moments of inspiration when the tune came together. So it felt like a nice way to kind of link all of the Crisis and Opportunity albums together was the actual composition, Crisis and Opportunity. And so every volume will have a different iteration and a different arrangement of this composition, Crisis and Opportunity. And I use it as a way to link all of the albums together, which will make a lot more sense once they're all out in the world, which will probably be over the next couple of years. But also it's like a way to like clearly say, like, here's this raw compositional material, but from that is this infinite amount of possibilities and infinite different kind of ways of interpreting it, which can sort of really spread across the broad musical paintbrush of what I am and what it is that I'm trying to do and who, to pardon me for speaking in the third person, but who Maeli Manzanza is as an artist, you know. It's like, here's this composition which can do all of these things, and it's a way of like, just trying to show people, like, you know, I am this cat who can do all sorts of different things, and, you know, that's an important part of who I am. And at the same time, I think it's just a really beautiful melody and kind of just a pretty piece that has a lot of different ways of interpreting it. And so for this one, on volume two, it was just like, I wanted to treat this as like a kind of slow moving groover that, you know, it sits at a fairly slow tempo, but there's like a big kind of crescendo and builds that kind of happens across the piece, which is very much a product of, you know, myself, Ashton, Aaron, Matt, and also a friend of mine, Lewis Moody, who did a bunch of synth and extra keys in post-production, coming together and letting the piece sort of take its journey. And yeah, I hope people really enjoy it and you know, are moved by it in whatever ways they are moved by it. And yeah, that's Crisis and Opportunity. It's like the attempt to try and turn something bad into something positive, and hopefully that's a way that I can continue to live my life.
That was Long Player. Thanks, NZ On Air Music.